Chapter 50. With steps more faltering and unsteady than those with which she had approached the room, the child withdrew from the door, and groped her way back to her own chamber. The terror she had lately felt was nothing compared with that which now oppressed her. No strange robber, no treacherous host conniving at the plunder of his guests, or stealing to their beds, to kill them in their sleep, no nightly prowler, however terrible and cruel, could have awakened in her bosom half the dread which the recognition of her silent visitor inspired. The gray-headed old man gliding like a ghost into her room and acting the thief, while he supposed her fast asleep, then bearing off his prize and hanging over it with the ghastly exultation she had witnessed, was worse, immeasurably worse, and far more dreadful, for the moment, to reflect upon than anything her wildest fancy could have suggested. If he should return, there was no lock or bolt upon the door, and if, distrustful of having left some money yet behind, he should come back, to seek for more, a vague awe and horror surrounded the idea of his slinking in again with stealthy tread, and turning his face toward the empty bed, while she shrank down close at his feet to avoid his touch, which was almost insupportable. She sat and listened. Hark! A footstep on the stairs, and now the door was slowly opening. It was but imagination, yet imagination had all the terrors of reality. Nay, it was worse, for the reality would have come and gone, and there an end, but in imagination it was always coming, and never went away. The feeling which beset the child was one of dim uncertain horror. She had no fear of the dear old grandfather, in whose love for her this disease of the brain had been engendered. But the man she had seen that night, wrapped in the game of chance, lurking in her room, and counting the money by the glimmering light, seemed like another creature in his shape, a monstrous distortion of his image, a something to recoil from, and be the more afraid of, because it bore a likeness to him, and kept close about her, as he did. She could scarcely connect her own affectionate companion, save by his loss, with this old man, so like yet so unlike him. She had wept to see him dull and quiet. How much greater cause she had for weeping now. The child sat watching and thinking of these things, until the phantom in her mind, so increased in gloom and terror, that she felt it would be a relief, to hear the old man's voice, or, if he were asleep, even to see him, and banish some of the fears, that clustered round his image. She stole down the stairs and passage again. The door was still ajar as she had left it, and the candle burning as before. She had her own candle in her hand, prepared to say, if he were waking, that she was uneasy, and could not rest, and had come to see, if his were still alight. Looking into the room, she saw him lying calmly on his bed, and so took courage to enter. Fast asleep. No passion in the face, no avarice, no anxiety, no wild desire, all gentle, tranquil, and at peace. This was not the gambler, or the shadow in her room, this was not even the worn, and jaded man whose face had so often met her own in the gray morning light, this was her dear old friend, her harmless fellow traveler, her good, kind grandfather. She had no fear as she looked upon his slumbering features. But she had a deep and weighty sorrow, and it found its relief in tears. God bless him! Said the child, stooping softly to kiss his placid cheek. I see too well now, that they would indeed, part us if they found us out, and shut him up from the light of the sun and sky. He has only me to help him. God bless us both! Lighting her candle, she retreated as silently as she had come, and, gaining her own room once more, sat up during the remainder of that long, long, miserable night. At last the day turned her waning candle pale, and she fell asleep. She was quickly roused by the girl who had shown her up to bed, and, as soon as she was dressed, prepared to go down to her grandfather. But first she searched her pocket and found that her money was all gone, not a sixpence remained. The old man was ready, and in a few seconds they were on their road. The child thought he rather avoided her eye, and appeared to expect that she would tell him of her loss. She felt she must do that, or he might suspect the truth. Grandfather, apostrophe she said in a tremulous voice, after they had walked about a mile in silence, do you think they are honest people at the house yonder? Apostrophe apostrophe, why? Apostrophe apostrophe returned the old man trembling. Do I think them honest? Yes, they played honestly. Apostrophe, I'll tell you why I ask, apostrophe rejoined Nell. I lost some money last night out of my bedroom, I am sure. Unless it was taken by somebody in jest only in jest, dear grandfather, which would make me laugh heartily, if I could, but no it apostrophe, who would take money in jest? Apostrophe apostrophe returned the old man in a hurried manner. Those who take money, take it to keep. Don't talk of jest. Apostrophe, then it was stolen out of my room, dear, apostrophe said the child, whose last hope was destroyed by the manner of this reply. But is there no more, Nell? Apostrophe apostrophe said the old man, no more anywhere? Was it all taken, every farthing of it, was there nothing left? Apostrophe apostrophe, nothing, apostrophe replied the child. We must get more, apostrophe said the old man, we must earn it, Nell, hoard it up, scrape it together, come by it somehow. Never mind this loss. Tell nobody of it, and perhaps we may regain it. Don't ask how, we may regain it, and a great deal more, but tell nobody, or trouble may come of it. And so they took it out of thy room, when thou wert asleep. Apostrophe apostrophe he added in a compassionate tone, very different from the secret, cunning way in which he had spoken until now. Poor Nell, poor little Nell. Apostrophe, the child hung down her head and wept. The sympathizing tone in which he spoke was quite sincere, she was sure of that. It was not the lightest part of her sorrow to know that this was done for her. Not a word about it to anyone but me, apostrophe said the old man, no, not even to me, apostrophe he added hastily, apostrophe for it can do no good. All the losses that ever were, are not worth tears from thy eyes, darling. Why should they be, when we will win them back? Apostrophe apostrophe, let them go, apostrophe said the child looking up. Let them go, once and forever, and I would never shed another tear, if every penny had been £1,000. Apostrophe, well, well, apostrophe returned the old man, checking himself as some impetuous answer rose to his lips, she knows no better. I ought to be thankful of it. Apostrophe, but listen to me, apostrophe said the child earnestly, will you listen to me? Apostrophe, I'll listen, apostrophe returned the old man, still without looking at her, a pretty voice. It has always a sweet sound to me. It always had when it was her mother's, poor child. Apostrophe, let me persuade you, then oh, do let me persuade you, apostrophe said the child, to think no more of gains or losses, and to try no fortune, but the fortune we pursue together. Apostrophe, we pursue this aim together, apostrophe retorted her grandfather, still looking away, and seeming to confer with himself. Whose image sanctifies the game? Apostrophe, apostrophe, have we been worse off, apostrophe resumed the child, since you forgot these cares, and we have been traveling on together? Have we not been much better, and happier without a home to shelter us, than ever we were in that unhappy house, when they were on your mind? Apostrophe apostrophe, she speaks the truth, apostrophe murmured the old man in the same tone as before. It must not turn me, but it is the truth. No doubt it is. Apostrophe, only remember what we have been since that bright morning, when we turned our backs upon it for the last time, apostrophe said Nell, only remember what we have been since we have been free of all those miseries, what peaceful days and quiet nights we have had, what pleasant times we have known, what happiness we have enjoyed. If we have been tired or hungry, we have been soon refreshed, and slept the sounder for it. Think what beautiful things we have seen, and how contented we have felt. And why was this blessed change? Apostrophe apostrophe, he stopped her with a motion of his hand, and bade her talk to him no more just then, for he was busy. After a time he kissed her cheek, still motioning her to silence, and walked on, looking far before him, and sometimes stopping and gazing with a puckered brow upon the ground, as if he were painfully trying to collect his disordered thoughts. Once she saw tears in his eyes. When he had gone on thus for some time, he took her hand in his as he was accustomed to do, with nothing of the violence or animation of his late manner, and so, by degrees so fine, that the child could not trace them, he settled down into his usual quiet way, and suffered her to lead him where she would. When they presented themselves in the midst of the stupendous collection, they found, as Nell had anticipated, that Mrs. Jarley was not yet out of bed, and that, although she had suffered some uneasiness on their account overnight, and had indeed sat up for them until past 11 o'clock, she had retired in the persuasion that, being overtaken by storm at some distance from home, they had sought the nearest shelter, and would not return before morning. Nell immediately applied herself with great assiduity to the decoration and preparation of the room, and had the satisfaction of completing her task, and dressing herself neatly, before the beloved of the royal family came down to breakfast. "We haven't had," said Mrs. Jarley, when the meal was over, "more than 8 of Miss Monflather's young ladies all the time we've been here, and there's 26 of 'em, as I was told by the cook, when I asked her a question or two, and put her on the free list. We must try 'em with a parcel of new bills, and you shall take it, my dear, and see what effect that has upon 'em." The proposed expedition being one of paramount importance, Mrs. Jarley adjusted Nell's bonnet with her own hands, and declaring that she certainly did look very pretty, and reflected credit on the establishment, dismissed her with many commendations, and certain needful directions, as to the turnings on the right which she was to take, and the turnings on the left which she was to avoid. Thus instructed, Nell had no difficulty in finding out Miss Monflather's boarding and day establishment, which was a large house, with a high wall, and a large garden gate with a large brass plate, and a small grating through which Miss Monflather's parlor maid inspected all visitors before admitting them. For nothing in the shape of a man, no, not even a milkman, was suffered, without special license, to pass that gate. Even the tax gatherer, who was stout, and wore spectacles and a broad-brimmed hat, had the taxes handed through the grating. More obdurate than gate of adamant or brass, this gate of Miss Monflather's frowned on all mankind. The very butcher respected it as a gate of mystery, and left off whistling when he rang the bell. As Nell approached the awful door, it turned slowly upon its hinges with a creaking noise, and forth from the solemn grove beyond, came a long file of young ladies, two and two, all with open books in their hands, and some with parasols likewise. And last of the goodly procession came Miss Monflather's, bearing herself a parasol of lilac silk, and supported by two smiling teachers, each mortally envious of the other, and devoted unto Miss Monflather's. Confused by the looks and whispers of the girls, Nell stood with downcast eyes, and suffered the procession to pass on, until Miss Monflather's, bringing up the rear, approached her, when she curtsied and presented her little packet, on receipt whereof Miss Monflather's commanded that the line should halt. "You're the waxwork child, are you not?" said Miss Monflather's. "Yes, ma'am," replied Nell, coloring deeply, for the young ladies had collected about her, and she was the center on which all eyes were fixed. "And don't you think you must be a very wicked little child?" said Miss Monflather's, who was of rather uncertain temper, and lost no opportunity of impressing moral truths upon the tender minds of the young ladies, "to be a waxwork child at all?" Poor Nell had never viewed her position in this light, and not knowing what to say, remained silent, blushing more deeply than before. "Don't you know," said Miss Monflather's, "that it's very naughty and unfeminine, and a perversion of the properties wisely and benignantly transmitted to us, with expansive powers to be roused from their dormant state through the medium of cultivation? The two teachers murmured their respectful approval of this home thrust, and looked at Nell, as though they would have said that there indeed Miss Monflathers had hit her very hard. Then they smiled and glanced at Miss Monflathers, and then, their eyes meeting, they exchanged looks which plainly said that each considered herself smiler in ordinary to Miss Monflathers, and regarded the other as having no right to smile, and that her so doing was an act of presumption and impertinence. "Don't you feel how naughty it is of you," resumed Miss Monflathers, "to be a waxwork child, when you might have the proud consciousness of assisting, to the extent of your infant powers, the manufactures of your country, of improving your mind by the constant contemplation of the steam engine, and of earning a comfortable and independent subsistence of from 2 and 9 pence to 3 shillings per week? Don't you know that the harder you are at work, the happier you are?" How doth the little murmured one of the teachers, in quotation from Dr. Watts. "Eh?" said Miss Monflathers, turning smartly round. "Who said that?" Of course the teacher who had not said it, indicated the rival who had, whom Miss Monflathers frowningly requested to hold her peace, by that means throwing the informing teacher into raptures of joy. "The little busy bee," said Miss Monflathers, drawing herself up, "is applicable only to genteel children. In books, or work, or healthful play, is quite right as far as they are concerned. And the work means painting on velvet, fancy needlework, or embroidery. In such cases as these," pointing to Nell, with her parasol, "and in the case of all poor people's children, we should read it thus. In work, work, work. In work alway let my first years be passed, that I may give for every day some good account at last." A deep hum of applause rose, not only from the two teachers, but from all the pupils, who were equally astonished to hear Miss Monflathers improvising after this brilliant style, for although she had been long known as a politician, she had never appeared before as an original poet. Just then somebody happened to. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.